Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green at the control panels, as always, and today we're having a conversation around pediatric dentistry, and specifically how to take the best possible care of the kids in your dental practice. We all understand that sometimes kids can be quite a challenge, but we also understand that kids can be some of the most rewarding patients ever. And my guest today is Dr. Tim Keyes, who is a specialist pediatric dentist at the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. In our conversation today, we cover a wide range of topics. We talk about dealing with behavioral issues and how to get the most out of kids. We talk about dealing with parents so they can be supportive for the kids and get the most out of the appointments. And equally, Tim provides some great tips and techniques about how to operate efficiently and well so that the kids aren't in the chair any longer than they need to be. It's a wide-ranging interview, and Tim is absolutely generous with his knowledge and shares openly and freely. And in fact, he's pointed us to a couple of resources so you can get more information about how to look after kids in your practice. I'd encourage you to head across to kidsdentaltips.com for more information about how to look after the kids in your practice. And if you want to find more about Tim and his practice, you can head across to dentistryforkids.com.au. As I said, it's a really wide-ranging interview, and Tim is just so comfortable with kids, he's so confident in treating them, and that comes through in the practical and useful tips and techniques he shares in this particular episode. I really hope you get as much out of this podcast as possible. As always, have a pen and paper handy because there's some absolute gold here that I know if you take into your practice, it's going to help you treat kids so well in your practice that the parents are going to love you, the kids are going to love you, and there's nothing but good things going to come out of that. So here's Tim. Dr. Tim Keyes, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang with us at the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you today, my friend?
Very good, thanks, Jesse. How are you?
Really well, thanks, mate. Really well indeed. All the better for talking to you. Now, mate, you've got a specialist pediatric practice at the Sunshine Coast, and I've known you for a number of years now when you're a general dentist, and of course, you've gone off and done your specialty training. I'm fond of saying that there's a special place in heaven for pediatric dentists. I really do believe that. I think it takes a really patient and kind person to go into that specialty. So I guess I'm always curious to ask, firstly, what's your journey been and when did you have that realization that you thought pediatrics was going to be the specialty for you and what sort of drove you in that direction?
Yeah, look, in our final year of university at the University of Queensland, about 10 years ago, we did a placement in the final year where they sent you out to rural and also sometimes city-based clinics. And I was meant to go out to quite a large country town called Toowoomba for about 4 months. But some circumstances changed for other people in the course, meaning that they took that position. And I was left at a place called Kingston Children's Hospital, Children's Dental Clinic down in Logan, which is a very low socioeconomic area south of Brisbane. So I was actually left there for about 6 months. And at the time, I didn't really like pediatric dentistry. I thought I wanted to do oral surgery. And I was left at this clinic for quite some time. And throughout that period of time, I began to realise that I actually really enjoyed the challenge of pediatric dentistry, which was a bit strange because I just signed up to be one of your subordinates in the Royal Australian Air Force. You was my boss, so where we don't actually see any kids. So this little acorn was planted at that period of time. And it just grew over time. I treated a lot of adults in the Defence Force where we didn't have to deal with money and we had great access to excellent clinical skills and development from other specialists that would come. And I just so happened to think that, look, paediatrics is the way we want to go. The benefit as well, I had some close ties with some other paediatric dentists. My uncle was actually a paediatric dentist in Queensland as well. He actually told me not to go anywhere near it. But I'm happy I didn't listen to that advice. I think it was obviously coming from a very good place. And some other pediatric dentists sort of gave me some guidance and some clinical tips as well that improved my practice, meant that I actually enjoyed dealing with children significantly amount more. But you're right, it definitely has its challenges some days, but it can also be incredibly rewarding working with some of these kids.
Yeah, fantastic. And just to be clear, mate, you were never my subordinate. I think I was probably the other way around. You could certainly hold your own there, mate. So you were a bit of a star in the Air Force. But I do want to talk to you a little bit about dealing with kids, because though I don't do a lot of clinical work myself these days, I've certainly found kids can, like you say, be some of the most challenging and yet the most rewarding patients ever. In my practice, I've found more challenge than rewards on occasion, but that might just be me. And so what I wanted to ask you about was, where do you see general dentists struggling in terms of providing the best possible care for kids? I mean, we all know that everyone's got the best intentions and all the rest of it, but it is a certain skill set. There's a certain quality that, you know, pediatric dentists seem to possess. And I'm just wondering, in your observation of working with lots and lots of general dentists, where do you see some of them just coming a little bit unstuck, that if they're listening to this, I might be able to go, actually, I relate to that, and what could I do differently to improve my ability to look after these kids?
Yeah, so I guess one of the main things I learned, and I'm still quite a new pediatric dentist, definitely, so I've still got a lot more to learn as well. But the main thing, the main challenge in pediatric dentistry is not the clinical component. You generally do a lot more difficult clinical things as a general dentist than as a pediatric dentist. The main challenge you're going to have is the behaviour management, which will be the behaviour management principally of the child. But the other big challenge you're going to get is the behaviour management to some degree of the parents.
Yeah.
So I guess the biggest thing that I learned and still learning to some degree is that I am quite an impulsive person and like to get straight into things when I'm presented with them. And particularly for children, that's really not the best way of going for the overwhelming majority of them, unless you're beginning to get your older kids who are 15, 16. So, for example, if you get a patient who presents to you and the parents called up and said they've noticed a hole on a lower right baby tooth and they're booked into your emergency time slot, my suggestion to be, if the child's not in any significant pain or anything, rather than jumping in and trying to correct that hole right then and there, actually have a good look at the rest of the mouth and mostly just perform a consultation.
Mm.
So that way you'll actually commonly detect other issues. I mean, if there's a big hole in one tooth, there's probably going to be more holes in other teeth. And also the child who may have never been to the dentist before doesn't come in getting confronted with needles and sharp instruments and filling materials and being told to sit still. They can actually just have quite an enjoyable experience in that they just have a conversation with you. You have a bit of a look. Hopefully you can get some x-rays taken as well. And then you can sit down with the parents and actually map out how we can go about doing this as efficiently as possible and as controlled as possible with getting your team and everything ready, so there's not people running in and out of the room. It's just you know exactly what you need to do and how you're going to go about doing it, and you can plan it well. That would be the main thing that can sometimes assist in getting a successful outcome behaviour management-wise from children. Sometimes the biggest challenge you're going to get is that the parents want something done then and there.
Mm.
And the benefit that we have in that we're referred patients is that we can always tell them that you're just going to have a consultation, and occasionally we'll do some treatment on the first visit if they come from 4 or 5 hours away working in a more regional centre. But as a general dentist, sometimes you don't get that luxury. You are pressured into providing a result then and there. But as much as you're able to, if you're able to conduct a consultation and just have a look around, you'll probably get a far more successful result at the end once you've corrected everything.
Mm. And you did speak a little bit about managing parents as well, and sometimes recall having parents in the room that seem to actually inadvertently increase the tension within the child. Now, little Johnny, this will only hurt for 5 seconds or so. You know, it's the classic one. And you go, oh, could you just not say that, please? Anything but that.
Yeah.
So I guess.
Just a small needle. Yeah,
it's just a small needle. Yeah, exactly. So my question for you is, when you're trying to manage the parent as much as the child, and I understand there's the concept of looking after the kid, which is great, what sort of things would you suggest to general dentists who are listening to this about parental management and how to create an environment where the parents are a little more relaxed and they're not transferring their own anxiety to the kids?
Yeah. Look, there are definitely, I'm aware, some practitioners out there that will actually discuss with the parents prior, particularly if they've sort of got a bit of a heads up and say, hey, look, when you come in the room, I'm the one who's going to be talking, I'm going to do this. And look, to be honest, I've never done that. I just didn't find that really worked for me.
Sure.
Generally speaking, as politely as possible, if the parents begin to go off a bit track and start saying stuff, I'll just talk over it and retake back control and redirect the child's focus back onto me. A lot of the time, you're right, the parents have really good intentions, but the way in which they can phrase things or present things is really, really bad, and it can be very awkward to confront to get around it. So sometimes that's where your reception staff and also your assistants can help you, because if the parents say, oh, look, I'm terrified of the dentist to the girls on the front, but I want my child to have a good experience, so I'm bringing them in now, that's where your receptionists are pre-warned to maybe tell them, hey, look, you've had a bad experience. Please make sure you don't convey any of that or say any of that to your child. Just let them know they're coming in for just a bit of a checkup and a bit of a look. They'll have a great time. They'll get a present by the end of it. Yeah. And then when you're in there, you can actually, we're fortunate in that we've got our clinic, which is designed just for children. So we've got a nice play area at the front. And we send the kids out to the front to play with the dental assistants, so then we can talk to the parents about what treatment's required. And that's when we can then begin to control the conversation a little bit better and sort of guide them and say, hey, look, next visit you come, we are going to be using some anaesthetic, which will be delivered by a needle. Please don't mention that to them. We're just going to use some special creams to put their gum to sleep. You know, they'll wear a special raincoat over their teeth, and we'll run the parent through every single step. So that way they're aware of it, and then they can present it to the child in hopefully a positive manner. And then sometimes we'll get the child back in, and then we'll have a chat and just briefly run them through and show them things like the nitrous mask and the rubber dam and a few other things, just so hopefully they're a little bit more comfortable for the following visit. If we get really difficult parents, which you will, they commonly go together, the anti-vaxxers, anti-fluoridators, they don't want any treatment, they don't want anything else. Usually I just send them to my wife, Sarah.
Yeah, that's what we call a geographic success, mate.
They're quite challenging. A lot of the time, you just put the onus back on the parents with them. You just sort of say, look, you understand that we've been using fluoride. It's one of the only things we've got in dentistry that's really scientifically proven to work. And if you don't want to use it, that's fine. It is a Western diet, so there's more sugar now than we've ever had in human history. So you just need to accept that you will have more failures, you will require more treatment, and it's probably going to end poor in a bad outcome for your child, but that's fine. I'm happy to help you as much as I can, but just be aware my hands to some degree are tied for the long-term outcomes for your child.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're not going to like that and they'll go to somebody else. It's not necessarily a bad thing. And other times they'll accept it, and then when there is a failure, which will occur, it's not your fault. It's they've accepted the responsibility for it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely. And I love the way that you've pre-framed that up front. And so the decision is theirs, but there's no right or wrong in inverted commas, but there are consequences and implications, really. And so they make their choice and they just have to live with those consequences and implications, and that's their lot. My question for you, mate, is do you ever have the parent out of the room? Do you advocate parents in the room most of the time, or is there a time or place for them to be out of the room? Is there any guidance around that?
Look, personally, I've always kept the parents in the room unless they've wanted to leave. And some of them will actually acknowledge that they're really terrible at the dentist, and they're themselves to just say, you're okay staying here by yourself. And we'll say, yeah, cool, that's fine. But but commonly, I mean, there is behavior management techniques where you deprive the child of the parent, and then when they're better behaving, you bring the parent back in. And to be honest, I've never actually used that. Once again, I'm aware of other practitioners who will use it, and they may report success. So I guess it's individual based, but I'll tend to always have the parent in the room. Also, as a male dentist, I also always prefer having the parent in the room. Like, we've got very strict protocols in that there's always a dental assistant with me at all times anyway. But that's another reason that I would always prefer a parent in the room as well. So there's just no congestion, no issues at all with what's going on.
Yeah, that's a fair call. I hadn't actually stopped to think about that, but that's really important these days, isn't it? It's definitely a thing. All right, mate. So obviously you've been through your specialty training. You're now in specialist practice. Over the years, when it comes to pediatric dentistry, or indeed dentistry more generally, what do you think has been some of the best advice you've received in your own journey?
Look, some of it actually came from you, Jesse, in that sometimes you've got to make I remember I stitched you up once with a case I didn't want to tell someone that they would be inappropriate to get, so I just sent them on up the ranks. I guess that sort of thing is that sort of confronting it and taking responsibility for what you're saying with someone. So if you're going to present someone with something and you've got to go ahead and do it, but to some degree that's now your name on that, and you've got to take responsibility for it. So similarly, the converse of that is that if you're pressured into doing something that you're not comfortable with, it doesn't matter that you're uncomfortable with it. You still take responsibility for it. So if you're not comfortable doing it, don't get in the situation as best you can and find a different avenue to get yourself out of it. The other really good advice I got was from a dentist who used to work in Bowen up in North Queensland, which is famous for the mangoes. And it was the benefit with dentistry is that as long as you look after the patients, the money will always look after itself. to some degree, you'll still be able to make a good salary being a dentist. Now, you may not make a lot of money and you may not be hugely successful, and there are other ways of doing that, like what you're doing, but you don't need to cut corners and compromise on treatment and certain things. It's going to impact on your income significantly.
Yeah. And so, you know, as you reflect on your journey, you know, through general practice into specialty practice, obviously you've received some good advice along the way, but are there things that, looking back, you've been out of uni now for 10 years or so, you haven't quite got the grey hair yet, mate, but give it a few years. I'm making up for both of us. But what I wanted to ask you was, are there things that, you know, now that you're that bit more experienced, things you'd wished you'd known earlier, whether it's about general dentistry, but particularly around pediatric dentistry, you kind of think, actually, you know, if I'd known that a few years ago, that would have saved me some heartache, that would have saved me some stress and anxiety. Any little tips and tricks that you've picked up along the way?
Yeah, look, been fortunate in that most of the people that I've had that have mentored me throughout dentistry and pediatric dentistry in general life have actually always, I thought, given me really good advice. Fortunately, haven't actually received too much bad advice. I've made a lot of mistakes in dentistry, and I will continue to do so as well.
As we all have, mate, as we all have.
Yeah. And I guess the big thing for me was what we were sort of talking about earlier is that I did used to be, and I still am, if you ask Sarah, my wife, she'll still say it is, like I do get quite impulsive, and sometimes it's very difficult for me to not jump into things. And I know that when I was a general dentist, I really did jump sometimes into some situations that I probably shouldn't have. And with, in hindsight, taking that time just to think about things and to say to people sometimes, look, I don't actually have an answer for you today. Can I just go home and have a think about this, and can I call you tomorrow? And we might even get you to come back in. We'll have a bit more of a chat about where to go from here. So it was that main thing that I think would help in pediatric practice, but just also adult practice as well, is trying not to jump straight in and do things sometimes, which is what we want to do as dentists. And taking a step back and looking at the overarching picture for that patient really helped.
I think that's really good advice, Tim. And for anyone listening here, I'd really encourage you to just to rewind the last 30, 40 seconds and listen to what Tim's shared there, because the whole slowing down to speed up concept, I think, is really important. Because, and again, Tim, both my hands are in the air when it comes to, you know, putting your hand up if you've made mistakes in the past. I think I've made every mistake known to man, plus a few extras. But one of the things I've observed as well is that if you slow down and you can gather your thoughts, you can choose your case as well. And that's, I think, really important, because nothing erodes confidence more than finding yourself in a sticky situation, or indeed biting off a bit more than you can chew, and then kind of getting halfway through something past the point of no return, and you're kind of in, you're into it, right?
Yeah.
And then you're kind of going, holy moly, I wish I hadn't taken this on. I remember years ago, actually just talking about military service, mate, when I was a young dentist on a ship, I had a guy with a toothache, and being your military background like yourself, you'll appreciate this, but we had no x-rays at sea at that time. And I remember looking at an old PA, it was 100 years old, and thinking, oh, I'll take the tooth out, because he wanted the tooth out because he's in so much pain. Yeah. And of course, we're in the middle of the ocean, I've decoronated the thing. And the beads of sweat dripping down my face were, you know, there for everyone to see. And thankfully, I had a very experienced dental assistant at the time. And it was a male dental assistant, Mick. And he just looked at me and said, "Cowhorns, boss." And thankfully, you know, Mick helped me get that tooth out. But it was my inexperience. It was my, like you say, being impulsive, impetuous, you know, taking on things immediately, where I didn't stop to think, whereas I should have just extirpated the pulp and dressed it. But I really like your advice, Tim, and I think that's really sound advice for anyone listening.
Thanks, Jessica.
Mate, I wanted just to come back to your conversation around efficient practice, because you touched on that a little bit earlier, and obviously there's some techniques, you know, rubber dam, nitrous oxide, and other things like that. But my experience, again, dealing with kids, is they probably don't want 27 appointments one after the other. You've got to be able to get in there and get it done and not have so many appointments that they feel like they're spending their life at the dentist. So beyond rubber dam and beyond nitrous oxide, are there any particular clinical things that you think people should be aware of in terms of working efficiently? And what about longevity of treatment? Looking at the distal of D's and all the rest of it, you know, they seem to get caries quite commonly. How do we address that really well so it lasts and we're not having kids coming back and forth?
Yeah. So look, Pretty much, I think that the going opinion out there of many pediatric dentists is that we just do everything under general anaesthetic.
Yeah.
which we obviously, as a society, we're really trying to change and say, look, we will attempt to get as much as we can done under local anaesthetic and nitrous. It's just that obviously the proportion of patients we get with significant medical or anxiety issues can complicate things for us. But for the patients we do want to treat under the chair, you're 100% correct. You want to try and minimise the number of appointments for them, make them efficient and enjoyable for the patient. So I'm aware that some practitioners will essentially just do half the mouth in one go. Personally, for myself, I'm probably not that comfortable doing that. I usually just keep to a quadrant.
Yeah.
But that's where doing that consultation and working out exactly what's required,
yep,
and mapping out what, how you're going to go about doing it and seeing if there is a way in which you can reduce the number of appointments. So if you know that you've got to take a couple of baby teeth out or you've got to do some more invasive restorations, but another quadrant only has some more preventive work that's required, you'll tie that in with another visit. So you may be able to reduce them down to about two or three visits.
Sure.
Rubber dam, definitely, on kids is the best thing you can possibly use. If you get them numb and they've got a partial rupture at six, that's cruel. Just do what you can, even put it over the gum sometimes, you know, because it will greatly increase your speed of practice.
Mm-hmm.
With pretty much LA, it's so important for kids. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of cases, some practitioners may think, oh, it's a baby tooth, we don't need LA, and he would just do a small filling. I would strongly encourage LA. There's nothing worse than getting halfway through something, the child feels it,
mm-hmm,
and then you've got to stop. So getting LA in is sometimes quite simple. And once it's in, you've got nothing to worry about. Mm. And then restorative materials yourself and what you want to choose to give you a longer-term success can greatly improve your outcomes. So for us, once again, everyone thinks pediatric dentists choose stainless steel crowns and that's all we sort of use. The reason we commonly tend to default towards them on larger carious lesions and primary teeth is that the 10-year success rate for them is 97%.
Wow.
So you're looking at a 0.3% annual failure rate.
Yeah.
When you look at composite resins, you're looking at around a 10 to 15% annual failure rate. And when you're looking at GICs, you're looking at around a 25% annual failure rate.
Wow.
So that's why we tend to default towards them. And you can still get away with a composite resin done really well, but even though it may just be taken out of your hands and that it may fail. So if you are going to go down the pathway of doing some stainless steel crowns, have a go on an E first, not a D.
Mm-hmm.
Some separators in first and create plenty of space for yourself. And that way it should all be a lot easier for you. And even if you are just restoring into proximity, sometimes with composite resin and things, you can always place some separators prior just to open some space up for you and make it a lot easier to actually get the restoration completed. So the only other things that sometimes you can do is that if you're planning things out and you know that you've got to do, for example, a pulpotomy or something, and you've got to wait a couple of minutes, and you similarly also have a sealant and maybe a composite resin to do, prep your pulpotomy and everything first, pop your cotton pellet in there, and while that's waiting for a couple of minutes, you can do your sealant or you could do your composite resin restoration on the other teeth. So that way you're not actually just sitting there wiggling your thumbs for a couple of minutes as well. But that's a very case-specific one,
of course.
Which is a bit tricky. So, look, I guess the overarching thing is just planning things out really well, trying to work with your head, what's the minimum number of appointments this child could tolerate and what type of materials are we going to use here and what's the way we can stagger that use of materials to increase the efficiency for us.
Yeah, mate, that's fantastic advice. Really practical, really helpful. And so again, ladies and gents, if you're listening to this and you do treat a lot of kids, again, I'm going to ask you to go back and listen to what Tim's just shared there because it's absolutely gold. It's practical, it's useful, it's based in science and it works. So thank you, mate. Mate, you've been really generous with your time today and I want to say thank you for taking the time to come and hang with us. But before we do wrap up, mate, I wanted to ask about the gospel according to Tim. I know, I've got to find a better phrase, but if there was anything you'd want to leave the audience with when it comes to managing kids, treating kids, dealing with parents and all those sorts of things we've covered, are there any salient things that you think, yeah, these are the two or three big points that you'd really want people just to kind of hang on to as they go about taking on the treatment of kids in their practice?
Yeah. It's not for everybody, treating kids,
yep,
but for those that don't mind it or those that enjoy it, it can be incredibly rewarding.
Yeah.
As I said, the clinical component it's not overly challenging on most occasions, but the behaviour stuff is awesome. And what having these children in your practice that hopefully you can see from a very young age, and I'm talking from the time that the first two's through, are going to do some really good things for your practice. They're going to help establish a good relationship with the parents, which mm-hmm. means they'll stay in your practice. You'll have these patients and you get to watch them grow up,
mm-hmm.
experiences as they live through life. And because sometimes I think as dentists, we seem to provide some therapy sometimes. I don't know why people seem to open up to you about all sorts of things. But this is really good. This is why if you can see the child's nice and early, hopefully you can avoid problems and just have really pleasant experiences with them. And they do become to trust you really well. And otherwise, the main tip is what I've sort of seen to reiterate quite frequently is for kiddies, you just can't really rush in.
Yeah.
They just are unable to tolerate it.
Yeah.
Like adults, they, 5-year-old children aren't designed to sit in a chair for 45 minutes and have anaesthetic put in, have teeth taken out or fillings done. So that's where that preparation will really improve your efficiency. Even with the CDBS and stuff, you can still bill quite well when you treat children. You're doing really good, high quality work as well. And you'll get a successful outcome that the child's going to be proud of and which you should really reiterate, and that the parent should be proud of as well, that their child has actually managed to get through something that they've viewed themselves as very challenging.
Mm. I think that's wonderful, mate. And again, ladies and gents, please have a pen and paper handy because there's some absolute pearls of wisdom there. Mate, again, I want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. You're up at the Sunshine Coast, mate, and what's the best place? So if there's anyone listening to this who happens to be in the Sunshine Coast area or surrounds and wants to find out a bit more about where you are with your practice, what's the best way for people to contact you, Tim?
Thanks, Jesse. Look, we're the best place is probably on the website, which is dentistryforkids.com.au, or feel free to give us a call as well. We're also trying to create some more sort of free CPD information as well for practitioners to hopefully help them on the way as well. And we've just called that dentaltipsforkids.com.au. So either one of those. And look, Sarah and I are both really passionate about pediatric dentistry and also hopefully being able to assist other practitioners in getting through. So we're more than happy to talk whenever we are available and give advice to anyone. That includes if people want to send photos or x-rays through or something, they just want to ask a second question, we are more than happy to respond, even if you don't live in the beautiful state of Queensland.
Well, for those of us who don't live in the beautiful state of Queensland, but would like to, I reckon there's going to be a lot of people wanting to check out that resource and even those that are in Queensland as well. So, mate, that's a really generous offer. And ladies and gents, there's some great resources on the Tips for Kids blog. I've had a look at it as well, and I really think that really encourage you to have a good squiz at it and take down as much information as you can. Tim, once again, thank you so much for taking the time, mate. You're an absolute trooper, and congratulations on the success of your practice up at the Sunny Coast. It's getting rave reviews. All the word on the street is a buzz that there's this great new pediatric practice in town, and well done to you, my friend, and to Sarah, of course, as well. That's wonderful.
Thanks very much, Jesse. I really appreciate your time.
Pleasure, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.